Hey, gang. So it's December and the holidays are here. And I want to let you know that now is a great time to support your local public radio station. Your support right now goes a really long way. I mean, the stuff you hear on NPR podcasts isn't simple. You know, they're a complex web of historical context and science and law and money and politics and emotion. And that's what public radio does. We explain, we probe, we follow, we fact check, we explain again. Conversations on NPR give you perspective, new ways to shed light on what goes on in the world. Support the thoughtful journalism that you rely on. Visit donate.npr.org/bullseye to give, then share how this show helped you understand this year with hashtag WhyPublicRadio.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's easy when the holidays roll around to put a nice sepia tone on that time of year. You think back to your childhood holidays and the bad stuff that happened, the disappointing gifts, family fights. Maybe it all kind of gets washed out with that warm, loving glow. Or maybe your memory of Christmases past are a bit more like Andy Richter's.
The ones that I really remember, my stepfather had a plumbing business, so we had some Christmases that were just an orgy of consumerism, and then a couple that were, you know, and then the next year would be sort of like, well, Santa's has it rough this year, I guess. North Pole wasn't getting any shipments.
Oh, it's Bullseye. Coming up, Andy Richter talks about family, holidays, and more. He'll also confirm what you probably knew already. The Charlie Brown Christmas special is a total bummer.
And so many of the jokes are like, the punchline is, like, well, I have hope and excitement. Oh, yeah?
Then I'll talk with Jane Lynch, the comedian and actress from Glee and Best in Show and all that other stuff. She has a new Christmas album that just came out. She likes the holiday plenty now, but back when she was a kid, Jane Lynch didn't mess around.
I used to love it as a kid. I had this thing about wanting to get the Christmas spirit when I was a kid, and I used to dim the lights and turn on the Christmas tree and turn on the music and sit there and wait for it to come, and then, you know, it wouldn't come.
Plus, holiday advice from the creators of My Brother, and Me. And me and the Pop Rocket crew will cook you up a hot list of must-see holiday movies. And there will be some talk about Die Hard. Just completely obligatory at this point. That's all coming up on Bullseye. Let's go. It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Like a sweet holiday onion, there are a lot of layers to Mr. Andy Richter. There's the Andy Richter you probably know, the longtime sidekick to Conan O'Brien, the actor with memorable roles on Arrested Development or in Cabin Boy. The star of Andy Richter controls the universe. He's a really funny guy. He's also a sincere lover of the holidays, pretty much however you celebrate them. He was gracious enough to come by last year to talk about all that with me. To get in the spirit, let's take a listen to a little holiday bit from Andy on Conan on TBS. This doesn't really need that much setup. It's called Andy's Holiday Scam Watch. And you guessed it, Andy is about to tell us about some classic Yuletide scams.
Thank you, Conan. This first one's called the letter trick. Your children start writing letters to Santa Claus asking for things like Game Boys and hoverboards. Well, you don't want to disappoint them, so you buy those things. Santa gets all the credit and you're out $600.
Scale!
That's not really a scam.
This next scam is called the parent trap.
Andy Richter, welcome to Bullseye. It's great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. It's taken me long enough. What's my problem?
We talked when Conan moved to TBS. You were
on that's right. But that was a million years ago before you moved
before
into
I
these
had
palatial.
My own, I had my own office.
That's right. That was when we were in a sweaty bedroom somewhere.
Now we're in this sweaty murder box.
Yeah.
The portable studio in
that's
which we
right.
record the show now. Are you a Christmas lover?
I am. I really do love it. And I am a pretty devout agnostic. So, you know, I'm one of those that just is, I don't care what it's about. I just think hanging lights on your house is great. I think getting a contact high from kids is great. I think setting aside a time of year that's kind of magical if you live in a snowy place, because the snowiness is still new and magical enough. It's not February, you know. It's not like when you get an ice storm in February where it's not so romantic. An ice storm on December 23rd, it can be deadly but it still feels like, oh, there's a transformative force in the universe that turned our whole world into a frosted mini wheat.
I like that you're willing to forgive a couple of deaths for the majesty of Christmas.
Come on, old people, probably.
Right.
Froze to death, there's worse ways to go.
Yeah. Supposed to be euphoric.
I didn't say deaths. You said deaths.
No, you said it could be deadly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I said could. It could be not deadly, too. Okay. I left that possibility open.
Did your family get along at Christmas when you were a kid?
Mostly. They were very up and down because of dysfunction and dissolution and alcoholism and fighting, you know, and just marriages breaking up and things like that that sort of threw a wrench into the works. And also, too, Christmas is they were very up and down depending on the economy. As my parents divorced when I was four, so I don't even really have a lot of recollections of Christmases prior to that that I can really be sure are actual memories and not manufactured ones based on photographs or home movies. The ones that I really remember, my stepfather had a plumbing business, so we had some Christmases that were just an orgy of consumerism, and then a couple that were, you know, and then the next year would be sort of like, well, Santa's has it rough this year, I guess. North Pole wasn't getting any shipments this year, so.
One of the great things about Christmas as an adult is that you have so much more agency. And you can create your own family.
Yes.
You can choose what it is that you want to celebrate and honor.
Yes. Well,
maybe after 30 or so.
Well, and also after getting past kind of informing the people that think there's an obligatory kind of like, well, you got to be here. You got to do this. And you kind of think, no, I've built my own family and we have a different set of rules. And it's still hard to disappoint people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 50 and it's still hard for me to disappoint some people but I just always hope that they know that, like, no, I love you, but I just kind of, we're not going to be there for that thing or we're, you know. It's a pain in the ass to get on a plane in the last, you know, in Christmas week. And so maybe we'll see in January, that kind of thing. And I live in Los Angeles because it's where, you know, it's the particular kind of ore that I mine. The
right.
veins in the earth are much richer here than anywhere else. But I also live here because I need some distance. I need distance, and not just from family or friends or history or geography. I need distance in my everyday life from, you know, I'm I've always been, like in college when you went into a classroom and got to sit wherever you wanted, you know, if I would be the one that even if people were sort of clustered into one part, I'd sit separate. I'd be a satellite to the rest. And I've always just kind of been that way. Now when the Conan show travels, I say, where's everybody staying? What hotels? And usually there's kind of the crew hotel. It's a nice hotel. But then there's the really nice hotel that sort of the dignitaries would stay in. And that would be where I always say, nah, stay like, I'll pick a third option. I'll Google for 5 minutes and find a third option. Because I just, when I get off the clock, I need some sense of separation and autonomy. And it's not part and parcel of any one situation. It's part and parcel of every situation in my life. I just, you know, get your claws off of me. It's always been sort of an undercurrent to me. Like, I need some room to breathe. Look, the bell just rang. It's time for me to go and be away from you.
Let's talk some more about Christmas. What Christmas things on television or in movies did you love as a kid?
I was not a kid, but it still is my favorite. And actually, my daughter and I just watched it for about the 30th time just two nights ago because we were home, just the two of us. And it's Pee-wee Herman's Christmas Special.
Oh, yeah. I love it so much.
Is the best. The best. I will watch it another 100 times in my lifetime because it is so joyful. It is so wonderful, so weird, so perfect. But no, that's one of my favorites. I still do love all the Rankin Bass ones. I feel like they used to hold my attention. It's much harder for them to hold our children's attention because our children's attention span has been so chopped down that they need constant action.
I tried to watch the Peanuts holiday special.
Yeah.
And
the Christmas, Charlie
the Christmas
Brown Christmas
one, yeah. And it's beautiful.
Yes.
It is very boring.
Very boring and a bummer.
Yeah.
A bummer.
I mean, it's genuinely beautiful, and that's a very rare quality in children's entertainment, and
yes.
I feel as though I should give it full credit for that.
Yes.
It is also boring.
Yes, it is. It is.
I mean, it may well be worth it. Again, mm-hmm. I just really want to be clear. I know that this is a childhood icon of, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even just for the beautiful, beautiful music.
But yes,
it is astonishing that when there was no other choices on television, you could be that boring and
yes.
retain an audience of children.
Yep. Well, and, you know, and the Rankin Bass ones are that way, too. Like, there's just lots of shots of people going from, in all children's entertainment that we accepted as entertaining, just lots of shots of people going from one place to another, which, you know, they cut all that out now. I just was watching.
There's so many shots in the Peanuts one of just like a totally static screen where six characters are not moving at all.
Yeah.
One character's feet are moving slightly and he's sliding across the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And the shot lasts for 25 seconds.
Right, right. And they also, too, it's little chunks of what were obviously four-panel bits. You know, they're just lifted jokes from the thing. And so many of the jokes are like, the punchline is, like, well, I have hope and excitement. Oh, yeah? Like, Charles Schulz, we would not have Peanuts if there had been Prozac in Charles Schulz's life. There just wouldn't be.
How do you think your kids' Christmas is different from your Christmas?
Well, intact family is number one. But less extended family. There's no church. And like most people, that was one of the few days we went to church. I don't think that there's any kind of diminished quality to it. The continuity that they've had, it's not anybody's fault or anything, but it's really something to have parents that are still, I mean, my wife and I have been married for 22 years now, and that's, I'm I'm very glad of that, and I'm very glad that my kids kind of get to enjoy the just the intrinsic benefits of that, the kind of the feeling that it gives them. Being married for 22 years is it's work, and it's certainly not a you know, a walk through the park, but it'd be one thing if it was 22 years of two people who were sick of each other, but it's not. It's 22 years of people who still love each other very much and are still very much partners in all aspects of their life. So that makes a Christmas merrier, I think.
One of the things about Christmas is that it is a celebration of continuity.
Yes.
Right? It's that every year, the seasons change. Every year there's Christmas.
Uh-huh.
In some ways, it's a celebration of things like being married for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It does sometimes, though.
Sometimes you think about divorce.
No, well, yeah, Jesus Christ. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, well, you know, driving by an apartment building near our house and think like, well, I guess, you know, I guess I could live there. I mean, I'd still be able to... You know, I could walk over to the house and still drive everybody to school, walk the dogs if necessary. My son just turned 16 today. Happy birthday, William. He's 16. My daughter's 11. With the passage of time, there is now, you know, they're not little kids anymore. And actually, my daughter just this year gave up Santa Claus. I mean, it was forced to because she held on to a belief in Santa Claus for a long time. I think stubbornly. I think kind of knew the jig was up, but still was like, still pushed through. My daughter came to my wife, and this is when I was at work, and said, she came up to her and said, "Mom, you're the tooth fairy, aren't you? You're the one that puts the money under my pillow." And Sarah said that because she was looking her right in the eye, she couldn't lie to her, you know. And she also was, she just couldn't lie to her when you look, you know. If you have a policy of not looking your children in the eye and lying to them, it's hard to break that policy. And she said, "Yeah, you're right, honey. I am the tooth fairy." And she said, my daughter flipped out, went crazy, crying. "Oh, my God, I knew it. I knew it." Crying and so upset and totally out of the blue. My wife threw a reaction my wife was not expecting. I'm trying to calm her down and calm her down. And then she said, she's crying and saying like, "What else has a lie? And I can't believe it. I feel so stupid that I believe this." And she said, "Well, Daddy's not Santa Claus, is he?" And my wife went, "No, no, no. Santa's real. Santa's real." And so she told me this, and I came home and I knew about it. And my wife, you know, I got home and I saw my wife and she's like, "Oh boy, wow, was that a shock that. And my daughter came downstairs and she said to me, "Did you hear?" I said, "Yeah, I heard." And then she said, I just am so upset by it. I didn't know it was real. I should have known. And then she said to me, she said, "Daddy, are you Santa Claus? Is Santa Claus real?" And there again, I was looking her in the eye. She's 10 years old. I said, "Yeah, honey, I'm Santa Claus." I said, "Well, Mommy and I, there isn't a Santa Claus." Oh, boy. Oh. Just awful. Just awful. And there again, she's like, "I feel so stupid. I can't believe I believed it for so long." And kids, it's... Because I was also thinking, you know, some jerk at school, some kid is going to ruin it anyway, you know, and like I said, I just couldn't lie to her. I just couldn't look her in the eye and lie to her. And she, you know, she ended up being okay with it and kind of like later laughing about it. But, you know, it was not easy to sort of, you know, disavow them of the notion of disavow her of the notion of magic. But all the reason I'm bringing it up is because the passage of time and the continuity is a wonderful thing about Christmas, but it is kind of, it does put a container on it. Like it is a ticking off, you know, like how many more Christmases do we have with my son as a resident in our house? And how many more Christmases do we have of toys under the tree? You know, when does it become, you know, just sweaters and iPhones? I mean, it's already kind of gone that way.
Well, Andy, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Andy Richter, ladies and gentlemen. Catch him on pretty much every episode of Conan on TBS, one of the most consistently funny shows on television, and he is a joy on it. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Andy Richter. Seriously, I love Andy Richter. Get yourself some Andy Richter in your life. More of the Bullseye Holiday Special after a quick break. Still to come, holiday advice from our friends the McElroy brothers, plus swinging Christmas carols from Jane Lynch. Stay with us. Support for this podcast and this message comes from 2020, where creatives get inspiring, authentic stock photos. Unlike traditional staged stock photos, 2020 has millions of real-world images your audience will actually engage with, all under a simple royalty-free license. Today, 2020 is offering Bullseye listeners a 7-day free trial of 5 photos. Monthly subscription begins after 7 days. To start your trial, go to 2020.com/bullseye. It's the Bullseye Holiday Special. I'm Jesse Thorne. You know, Bullseye has a sister show, Pop Rocket. It is a pop culture panel discussion, and two of those panelists are here with me, novelist and journalist Margaret Wappler. Hey, Margaret.
Hi there. It's good to be here.
Digital strategist Winter Mitchell. Hey, pal.
Hello, hello.
Okay, let's talk about Christmas movies, because this is the holiday special of Bullseye. First of all, the first question, I think, is what actually constitutes a holiday movie or a Christmas movie? Does it have to be set at Christmas time, or does it have to be about Christmas time, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or your preferred winter holiday? My aunt literally sends out cards that say "Happy Solstice."
Happy all of it.
Yeah, that's some Oakland stuff.
I think it has to either be set around Christmas, or it has to be somehow about Christmas. One or the other.
You think either way?
Yeah.
Winter, you must feel that way because one of your favorite Christmas movies you've written is Die Hard.
Listen, the whole concept of a holiday movie is it has to do with family, discord, acrimony, or harmony. And it has to be set, obviously, around the winter time season.
So do you have to have, like, twinkling Christmas trees, or can it just be snow on the ground?
I like, well, Die Hard clearly doesn't have any snow on the ground. To me, it was the synthesized. The reason why Die Hard is one of my choices, the reason why is because I very rarely see a West Coast focused Christmas theme. And it was very much like, we're on the West Coast, Christmas is happening, but it's also sort of, you know, the way we do it.
It's muted. We're never going to get snow on the ground.
No,
so we don't get that whole thing.
No, we don't get that. I've never had a Christmas like that. So I don't know anything about it.
I did. I watched Die Hard maybe a year or two ago.
Okay.
For the first time since I was maybe a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I had a great time. It really
holds up.
It really is one of the strongest of its genre. You know, that kind of classic 80s action film. It's fantastic. It is a really fun movie that moves well even 25 years later.
I also have to say the one thing, besides being a great holiday movie and sort of upending the genre altogether, is that it's Bruce Willis's movie. It's also Alan Rickman's movie, but it's Bruce Willis's movie. I honestly feel like he empowered Arnold Schwarzenegger to start becoming a bit more of a caricature of himself, because mm-hmm. it was like he was quippy and he was dutiful and he knew his job and he had a focus and it was getting with his family.
Now, Margaret, you have also sort of gone whole hog in the category of alternative Christmas movies.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I can't wait to see her picks.
Well, Margaret, I'm looking at a piece of paper that says that your favorite holiday movie is Eyes Wide Shut.
You did not.
The late period.
Merry Christmas. There's nothing like a masked orgy to welcome in the holiday season.
Oh, my God, Waffler. Gee, another family discord scenario.
This is another movie where it's all about getting back home to your wife. It's the same thing, in a sense, as Die Hard, where we have a couple who are in Manhattan, and the movie starts out with them going to a Christmas party. And at the Christmas party, some things happen on both ends between Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise that puts their relationship into question and sends Tom Cruise on this psychosexual nightmare. And throughout the movie... which is Christmas to me.
Happy holidays.
Throughout the movie, you see Christmas trees stuffed into just about every available corner.
Yeah.
In fact, like the red and green saturated tacky Christmas lights are often beaming down on the characters as they're going through things psychologically. And it's perfect use of Christmas in a sense, because when you're not having a good Christmas, there's nothing more alienating than all of that crap and cheer around you.
Let's talk about classic traditional Christmas and holiday film fare.
Sure.
You guys both have offered us alternatives, cynics' choices.
realist. I prefer realist.
Do you like to sit around and watch It's a Wonderful Life or the Charlie Brown Christmas special?
Well, I will say that when I finally did sit down to watch It's a Wonderful Life...
Oh, that's right.
I actually was like, this is a really good movie.
Yeah.
I was taken with it. It's charming and it's deep. But I didn't expect that, because I would just see like little snippets on TV and be like, this just looks boring and hackneyed.
I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
I think
I have a TV VCR at my cabin where I'm going to be spending Christmas, and I do have it on VHS. I made sure to buy it.
Good.
Jesse, dive in.
What about Elf? I mean, Elf is a contemporary Christmas film that I think is really funny and really delivers.
Yes,
it's a real solid three and a half star movie with a Christmas theme that you can watch. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a perfect film, but like, it's really enjoyable and it's very funny.
It's definitely given him, Will Ferrell, like a place in the Christmas, you know,
pantheon.
It's worked for him. Why he didn't merch off that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit from Elf. So in this scene, Buddy the Elf, which is Will Ferrell's character, is working at a fake Santa's workshop in New York City in a big department store. It's his first day. He just met his boss. And his boss is announcing to all of the shoppers there that Santa's coming the next day.
Wow. What's this?
This is the North Pole.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Where's the snow?
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
It's time for the announcement.
Okay.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
He'll be here to take pictures with all the children.
Yeah.
Just keep your receipts. 10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
Santa's coming to town.
Yes.
Can you sign this for me?
Make work your favorite is a line I completely forgot. And I remember seeing it in the theater and just howling. Faith on love, man. Make work your favorite.
Okay, here's a question, because I don't want to leave on a positive note here.
We don't want to do that. No.
We don't know.
What are the classic Christmas entertainments that just don't work for you?
I'm kind of done with everything. I've seen everything like 100 times. I grew up with traditional Christmases. And then as the patriarchs pass on, my parents were never stoked about Christmas. I can remember like 7 out of 18 of my first 18 Christmases being like totally on point and the rest being like, eh, yeah, it's Christmas. Here you go. So there's a lot of traditional stuff. I think the one that you can watch because you know all the words and it makes sense and it's easy and it's funny and it does its job, Home Alone. It's Home Alone. And then A Christmas Story. As if TNT and TBS will forever play those movies 24 hours, I'd be fine with that on my deathbed.
Our producer, Kevin Ferguson, took a bold and strong stand against A Christmas Story.
I was just going to say that's the one that I would kick out of the canon.
Are you crazy?
I think you need to see it again. It's like now. It is kind of boring and like a little sexist in parts.
It was 1940. Like,
I know,
fine.
But
you
like...
know that that movie was not made in the 1940s, no. though, right, Winter? It's just set.
I just love that he clearly is suffering from anxiety disorder, untreated. And the absolute need and necessity to be cool and not bullied and have a gun seems like Christmas for a lot of us in this country. I feel like it still works. Plus, Darren McGavin, such a good dad. Such a great dad, just kind of like the dad. When he gets the leg, that whole sequence with the leg lamp, just so, oh, when it breaks, his heart is broken. Just like that felt like to me, they feel most realistic to my family. Most realistic, because like when all hell breaks loose and after all, the turkey is just not going to work, Chinese restaurant ends up being the best thing ever. And then they actually see through his passion and give him the damn gun. You know what I mean?
That's Winter Mitchell's true spirit of Christmas.
Get that shotgun.
Get it fast. Beg for it from everyone in town. The teacher, the Santa at the mall. Let everyone know I need a gun. ASAP for Christmas.
Suddenly it does seem very American,
see?
Doesn't it?
See? See?
Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, panelists on our sister show, Pop Rocket. Thank you so much for joining us with a few of your favorite and a few of your least favorite holiday films.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
And I imagine ho, ho, ho. This conversation will probably be continued over on Pop Rocket, right?
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes, of course. Absolutely.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's the Bullseye Holiday Special. I'm Jesse Thorne. So when I need advice, guidance in life, I always turn to my friends at the podcast, My Brother, and Me. It's an advice show. It's hosted by three real-life brothers, Justin, Travis, and Griffin McElroy. And, you know, the holidays are a very fraught time for all of us. So I thought I would open things up to our listeners and theirs and have them offer a little bit of holiday advice. Hi, McElroys. How are you?
Good,
hello,
Jesse. Tyler. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for that enthusiastic holiday greeting, Griffin.
I've had it. I'm slopped on that nog, if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't, actually. What does that mean?
I think that meant that I had drank a lot of eggnog, and now I'm drunk at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Sloppy drunk, too, not
yeah,
just drunk.
Apparently.
Sloppy drunk. Like you knew we had this recording, Griffin.
Yeah, the problem is I love the flavor of it, and so I drink a lot of it, and then I turn around and I'm slopped on the nog.
Griffin, my biggest concern is that I do not believe there was alcohol in that nog.
No, I'm lactose intolerant, so it goofs me up in a different way.
Let's get into the questions. Here's one from Fumbling in Florida. I've had my current job for almost 8 months. I work at a small office, and I'm generally seen as a very helpful and useful person. I've never had an office job like this before, and given that it's me and my two bosses, I'm not sure what the holiday gift-giving rules are here. Is it like Teacher Appreciation Day, and I give them a mug or a chocolate rose? Gift cards? Do I need to do anything at all? Help me. What should Fumbling in Florida be giving to his or her two bosses?
Oh, this is awkward. Jesse, did you include this question because you're our boss at Max Fun and you would like us to get you something?
Yes, a chocolate rose specifically.
That will let you know that you that we've chosen you to remain on The Bachelorette.
My first concern, frankly, is that Fumbling in Florida was giving his or her teachers chocolate roses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot.
I got them edible underpants. Is that okay?
It sounds like this. The arrangement is it's you and you have two bosses, and that is everybody that works in the office. So the only thing I have to go on is you would get them presents like I give my dad presents, which is to say just a recent picture of myself and then just a scan of a recent report card just to let him know, like, I'm doing very good and I'm growing up good and strong.
Yeah, I think you'd – okay, this is – the magic of the giving of gifts at the holiday season. I don't think you're obligated to give your bosses presents. I don't think it's a thing like that's going to come up in your yearly performance review or anything. And that means when you do it, you can put the least amount of thought and effort into it and still make an impact. Like the fact that you did anything at all will seem like, oh, I didn't expect a chocolate rose. Thank you so much.
Could you bake something? You a baker? Hey, are you listening? Can you talk back? Question, are you a baker? Because I think baking treats is always nice because it really comes from the heart. It doesn't cost a lot, but it really shows that you care.
What about if you put it in a holiday tin?
Oh, well, that's really festive, Jesse. Thank you. I think a holiday tin, as Jesse suggested, perhaps a non-denominational one would be ideal. Perhaps a nice winter scene, something a Thomas Kincaid sort of inspired holiday tin.
Or just an old butter cookie tin.
Sure, those are very useful. That shows you care about the environment, recycling. That's very on trend. Thank you, Travis.
Here's something from Keeping It Christmassy in Canada. Settle the classic debate for me. Real tree or artificial?
I have very strong feelings on this because when I was a kid, I stepped on a pine needle and I didn't know it. And part of it became embedded in my foot and was there for months. And became severely infected, and I had to go to the hospital.
Travis is half sap now.
I do a real tree every year, though I have a few major issues with it. Number one, I have sort of customized my life so that it reflects my unique skill set, my uniquely limited skill set. And I'm not put in situations a lot where I'm having to fake knowledge about something. But certainly evaluating trees at the tree store when I have to look at several dozen trees and say, good, very good. That's going to flesh out nicely. I'm really unqualified to do that. And I usually just end up relying on my wife. The other big issue that I have with it is once the tree is on, my wife won't let me run any other errands to sort of double down on being out of the house and trying to knock two birds out with one stone. On our most recent excursion to pick up a tree, I had my heart set on some Long John Silvers, and my wife told me that I was not allowed to go through the drive-thru at Long John Silvers with a tree on top of the car because, quote, it would be weird. And I really pressed her hard on this one because I really wanted to know what the crime was in just driving around with a tree on your roof and getting some delicious crispy fish. But she couldn't back it up, but she has very strong feelings about that.
We'll continue our conversation with the crew from My Brother and Me after a short break. Still coming up, what do you get for the person who literally does not want anything this year? It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. Hey, real quick. I've been doing this a while, and something that I've learned is that folks like you really care about these shows. You love to listen. You love your stories. It's a personal connection to the world, so why not keep that love alive? Visit donate.npr.org/bullseye to give, then tell the world why you are passionate about listening by tweeting or posting on Facebook with #WhyPublicRadio. It's the Bullseye Holiday Special. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the McElroy brothers, Justin, Travis, and Griffin. Together, they host the advice podcast, My Brother and Me, and we are taking your pressing holiday questions right now. Here's something from Confused in Carson City. Is it okay to still get someone a present after they asked you not to? Should I hold off until their birthday or go through with it despite their protests?
It depends on how they said it. If they said it like this, like no, we don't have to get each other presents. Is it? Yes, you should get them a present. But if they were like, don't get me a present. I don't want it. I don't want to celebrate Christmas. I don't want to. Then you shouldn't. Like, it all depends on how they said it.
And why do you not want presents? Nobody doesn't like getting things. It's excellent. It's truly excellent. It's one of the most excellent things in life is to get a thing. I don't understand why you don't want this.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That moment when you realize that it used to be theirs and now it's yours. There's nothing better. It's like a little quickening every time.
In my house right now, I have 619 things. I always have a running tally in my head of how many things I have. Christmas is a time when people roll up and they're like, here is a sum total, like 36 new things. And I'm like, what? This rules. This is so great. I'm going to add this to the total, to the tally. And then when I die, I'll end up on the leaderboards somewhere.
I'm imagining that leaderboard that Griffin was describing. In my mind, it's housed on a table version of Miss Pac-Man in a pupusa restaurant by where I grew up.
Yeah, every time that you go to Griffin's house, you actually can't begin your visit until he makes you visit. He calls it the bobble wing. And it's just shelves of bobbles and knickknacks that he's obtained over that 12 months.
It's sort of like a dragon's hoard.
Here's something from Wondering in Winnetka. For Christmas, I'm flying home to Rhode Island from Los Angeles to surprise my dad. The problem is he wants to mail me presents so we can open them over Skype together. How can I convince my dad to not send me Christmas presents without letting him know something is up?
That's a good one. I'm assuming he's not a Bullseye listener because the jig is up. This is really tough.
You're gonna have to ship your dad to Los Angeles. You have to get your dad from Rhode Island to Los Angeles. You guys fly past each other in the sky, and then oops, we did the thing that happens on TV sometimes where I came to your house, you came to my house. What? Well, grab the presents that you sent me while you're there, and then you fly home, please.
I'm gonna stay here though.
I'm gonna stay here in Rhode Island though.
Let me pitch something. This is what I would do. You're going to have to do an undercut surprise. I want you to tell your dad that you are coming in, but you won't be able to come in till the new year. And so you want him to just hold on to your presents. Right? So then he's holding on to your presents so you can open them together. That way he kind of like he knows why he's holding on to them. But boom, there you are, Christmas Day. Merry Christmas, Dad. I came early. That kind of idea.
You could take it one step further and say that you're going to be in for Christmas, but you're not going to be able to visit him. You have a lot. And if you could just leave the presents on the porch.
I've got a lot of commitments, Dad.
You'll get them at your convenience.
Why leave it at you won't be able to visit him? Why not kick it up to you don't care to visit him?
Mm-hmm. He'll be enjoying your company.
Papa. I'm going to spend Christmas Day sitting in a hotel room just down the street from you. I want you to know that.
How difficult would it be to get your father on some sort of terror watch list so that any packages he attempts to send through the mail are immediately returned to sender?
It would specifically have to be a mail terrorist watch list, like a Unabomber list.
Early Christmas present to your father, fake stamps. You say, hey, I got these novelty stamps for you from your favorite television show, The Pretender. Remember with Jared? You love that show. So I got you some Pretender stamps, but they're legal, so go ahead and use those. Oops-a-daisy, shipped right back to your dad just in time.
Well, Justin, Travis, Griffin, I think we're all leaving this better people than we were on our way in, huh?
I would argue that we saved Christmas.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me on the Bullseye Holiday Special.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Bye.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Justin, Travis, and Griffin McElroy. They're the hosts of the astonishing smash hit podcasts, My Brother and Me, The Adventure Zone, and many more here at MaximumFun.org. There's also a My Brother and Me TV show. You can watch the first season of it. Follow the link on the Bullseye page at MaximumFun.org. It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. When you watch Jane Lynch, you pretty much always know you're in for something really funny. You might know her from Glee, from movies like The 40-Year-Old Virgin. But when she's in a Christopher Guest movie, she really stands out. She's played a lifelong pedigreed fancy dog trainer in Best in Show, the judge of a mascot competition in Guest's most recent Mascots. And did you know that she can sing, too?
For years now, Jane has sung original swing tunes and standards all over the country with a full band and the whole nine yards. When we talked last year, Jane and her band had just recorded their first ever Christmas album. It's called A Swingin' Little Christmas. It's out now. Let's take a listen to the title track.
Swing a little party with all of our friends. We're hoping you dig the invitation, make a plan to attend. We're gonna be singing jingle bells until the holidays end. A swing a little Christmas time. We're gonna be wrapping up your present with a big shiny bow. You won't wanna miss a single minute. Don't be late for the show. There's gonna be gingerbread and tarties, and the band's gonna blow.
Jane Lynch, welcome to the Bullseye Holiday Special.
Thank
it's great
you.
To see you.
Oh, it's so great to see you, too. Thanks.
You're really singing your butt off on this record.
Yeah, and I, as I'm listening to it, going, where did we breathe? Because we're performing that live now, going like this.
I like that you took your celebrity from Glee.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we spoke, the celebrity from Glee had just
blossoming. Great. Yes, indeed. It had just pierced through the ground.
You had just gone from like 20 years as a working actor to
angry,
famous person completely by surprise.
Bitter. Yes, exactly.
And I'm glad that you took your fame and financial security and decided to launch a cabaret act.
Yeah, there you go.
It's clear that the whole time you were just like, if I can just get on stage and sing.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason for the whole trajectory. Now I will do a cabaret show.
Was it precipitated by all the volume of singing that was going on Glee, or from being on Broadway? That was like one of the first things you did.
It's probably the Broadway thing. I mean, and the Glee thing too probably started it. But I've always loved singing. I've done been in sketch comedy shows since my late 20s, and we always do a silly little musical number. And we were usually quite musically good, but it was funny. And then of course Annie as well, doing Annie on Broadway.
I don't always enjoy watching musical theater, particularly, I have to admit.
One of those. Okay. Whatever.
I'm not against it. I'm not against it. Good. I just don't. It has to really work for it to work for me as an audience member.
I get you. Yeah.
But if you said to me right now, here's a part in a musical, I'd be like, yeah.
All over it.
I can't sing. I can't dance. But it is fun.
It's so much fun. Doing Annie was like I got bitten by the theater bug again. I hadn't been on stage in a very, very long time. And I was up there with all these people, and we all loved each other, and we all had little, inside jokes, and we'd look at each other and ha, ha, ha. And we all hated the children. And it was really fun. We didn't hate the children. They were great kids. That's kind of led directly to 54 Below, which is a cabaret space in New York, asking me if I wanted 4 nights to do my act, which I didn't have. Most Broadway people have an act. So I grabbed Kate Flannery, who was Meredith the Drunk in The Office, and said, let's do a show. And it led to this thing, that record you just played.
Kate Flannery does have an act. Kate Flannery
yes,
is a great great singer, sings with a comedy
amazing
group
singer
called The Lampshades.
Mm-hmm.
When you agreed to have a cabaret act, was it a daunting prospect?
Yeah, it was like, what am I doing? I don't know how to do this. And I knew, but it was something I wanted to do. There was something stronger inside of me screaming yes than the pretty loud voice saying no. So I said yes. And of course, I called Kate right away. We've been singing on and off together for a long time. And so we knew, she's a legit singer. She's a legit.
Yeah,
she's
she
a throwback.
Really blow, yeah,
and she's a throwback. She can sing like the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, which this Christmas album is basically a retro album of that period. And it's one of my favorite, too. So I brought Kate along, and then I hear people like cracking up as I'm singing this song. And I look back, and she is the shenanigans. And so thus was born kind of a heighten and explore of what was already our dynamic, which is kind of an Eve Arden, Kay Ballard kind of thing, where Eve Arden is the tall, like, disapproving one, and Kay Ballard's the loud, wacky Italian, even though Kate is Irish.
I mean, one of the things about singing on stage, and singing in general, is that it requires shamelessness in a way that even comedy doesn't necessarily. Like, you have to.
Yes, I see what you mean. It's
you can't sing
raw
on stage without putting all of yourself into it. There's no holding back.
And
when
if
you're
you
singing.
Are, you they can tell.
Yeah,
anybody can tell. You can feel it. I remember that I saw a picture of myself, and I was holding the mic, and my eyes were closed, and my head was back, and I was like, wow, you really think you're a singer. It's really exposing. It's almost like dancing in a way, too. It's almost like you take all of your clothes off and you say, check this out. It's a nude kind of a thing.
Do you like Christmas music?
I do, yeah. I haven't for a while, though, I will be perfectly honest.
You, like, took a break from liking it?
Yeah, but as an adult. I used to love it as a kid. I had this thing about wanting to get the Christmas spirit when I was a kid, and I used to dim the lights and turn on the Christmas tree and turn on the music and sit there and wait for it to come, and then, you know, it wouldn't come. And so I kind of got turned off by it, and I think Christmas goes on far too long, says the woman who started pushing her album November 1st.
I'm still impressed by this Christmas seance that you're holding. Like, it sounds like you're like Lenny Kravitz's producer, and you're like trying to get the studio ready for Lenny.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Turn down the lights. I know. Let's burn some incense.
I was trying to get the Christmas spirit.
Put some scarves on the lamps.
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you think Christmas was supposed to be that you weren't getting as a kid?
This magical thing where you're filled with joy. It's what we chase when we have a beer, when we smoke a joint. When I get my coffee in the morning, we're chasing that thing, you know, that place of bliss.
You grew up in the Midwest, right?
I do. Yeah, Chicago.
So it was like a snowy. Like Chicago,
yeah,
is sort of a Christmas place.
It
to
is.
Me.
No one does Christmas like Chicago. I've been saying that in all the interviews lately.
It might just be because I watched Home Alone a lot as a kid that I believe that.
It is. But it's a beautiful. The city really does it up, and I'm from the suburbs, and we did it up too.
What did you think Christmas could be? Like, what was the thing that you imagined that you were trying to achieve?
Oh, it's the whole, that's the thing when the Grinch's heart gets bigger, 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 and then almost explodes. Or does it explode? I'm trying to remember. And it's what happens to Ebenezer Scrooge. Merry Christmas! You know, it's that thing where your heart just fills with joy. And there's nothing worse than December 26th when all the lights are still up. It didn't happen. The joy didn't happen. And as an adult, I just didn't even bother putting this stuff up. I was like, oh, this is crazy. So this is kind of my reentry in, as a sane adult individual into the beauty of this music and the beauty of what this season, which we should have, you know, 24/7. You know, once you get past your hate of religion, there's just beautiful sentiment, you know.
I don't think that's a universal condition.
I guess not. I don't. And in fact, I don't have a hate. That was just for comedy purposes. Just I don't buy into it.
Well, let's hear some more music from Jane Lynch's new Christmas album. Let's hear Jingle Bells. I mean, that's a classic. Did spending your summer with Christmas change your feelings about Christmas this year?
No, it didn't. Let's say how it did. It is something that can happen all year long because I got into the Christmas quote-unquote spirit over the summer doing this, and mainly because I love music so much. So is it Christmas spirit or is it music spirit? I don't know. But I was a very nice person while we were doing this. I was very happy and couldn't wait to get to the studio. And enjoyed the entire process. And then listening to this album, like the first time I got to hear it, after it went through all the processes of being mastered and balanced or whatever those people do, I was so proud of it. And pride isn't even the word because I don't even really kind of feel like I did anything. I feel like we all just had a beautiful intention and some skill. And, you know, the muse took over truly.
You know, you were on the show years and years ago, something like 6 years ago or something like that. And at the time, you had just become both a famous person and a famous gay person. We talked about your coming out, which involved basically people noticing that you had never been in the closet,
yeah, right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And I've just been curious, like, how do you feel about this 5 years of being a famous gay person with, yeah, capital letters at the beginning of each word? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I feel like your celebrity in a way was part of a real turning point in the way that public culture,
I agree, yeah,
addresses homosexuality, LGBTQ issues generally.
Mm-hmm.
You are one of the first people to become a legit famous person who wasn't required to have
the press conference.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, you know, Ellen really took one for the team.
Yeah,
you know, she it became a big deal. America loved her, and then found out she was gay, and so she was obliged to. I don't know if she want. I know she didn't. I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I can't imagine she would have wanted to have that Ellen episode where I'm coming out, the TV show, and then that went away, and she's now like became the face of American Express and has one of the most popular daytime talk shows, perhaps the most popular. I would imagine she is like a dynasty. People friggin' love her. She's making bed sheets now, and people are eating
they
them
love
up.
Her as long as she does that dance at the beginning.
The dance in the beginning.
I know a couple of people that worked on the show when she stopped doing that dance for like 4 days.
Yeah,
and it was cataclysmic.
I'll bet. And I think she probably got tired of it and wanted to move on.
Yeah,
and but America wouldn't let her.
Being, yeah.
And I love watching, you know, I'll drive by Warner Brothers sometimes and you see the audience in line and it's all Midwestern ladies who have flown out here to be in the audience of that show, excited as hell to dance with Ellen. And they're probably all maybe 10 years ago would have been like, ooh, lesbians.
Right.
No, not at all anymore. They love her. So I was the beneficiary for sure because I don't know that I would have had the courage. I had a lot of shame about my sexuality when I was younger. And if I thought that I was going to have to like say, yeah, I'm an actress, but I'm gay. Oh, I would have scared the hell out of me. So, you know, this path was kind of paved. People like Rosie, and they came through with a machete. And I just walked through the jungle unmolested.
How much younger are we talking about? Did you have a lot of shame? I guess I'm wondering if partly like the surprise that happened when you became like a public person rather than just a working entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, I got to be the person I am because there's not another choice now.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of it. And also I felt safe. I felt safe in my own self about it. And I felt, you know, safe in the world. So I wasn't concerned about hiding anything or you know, standing up and, you know, having a press conference that probably nobody would attend.
Let's talk a little bit more about Christmas. Do you have fond Christmas memories, or are all your Christmas memories about failing to achieve the state of Christmas?
That... There are a lot of them about failing to achieve. Let's see. As I got older, you know, when I was living as an adult in Chicago and I would have to go back to... It just wasn't anything. It was a non-event. You know, I'd have to go back to the suburbs to have. And it was I certainly didn't decorate my house or anything like that. I still don't. I leave that to my sister who, like, creates a Christmas village in her home. I don't have that. But I must say I enjoy it, but just for those 4 or 5 days. And then, like I said, December 26th, I'm home and it's over and it's behind me. And I don't want to hear the music. And this is terrible. A person who just released a Christmas album, I don't want to hear it for more than like a week.
Right.
But maybe now it'll be different that I love this album so much.
What was the composition of your family when you were a kid? Were your folks together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was your extended family around? Like,
yeah.
Was Christmas
yeah.
a time when everybody was there?
Yes. I'll give you some great memories. When I was in high school, I have an older sister, a younger brother, and we were all in high school at the same time. My parents loved to sing. My dad was a harmonizer and my mom would do the melody and we loved Christmas carols. And we used to have for about 4 years there, we had an open house Christmas Eve party where all of my friends, my sister's friends and my brother and like two friends, he was a bit of a stoner, would come and, to the house. And my parents, all of my parents' friend and, Andrea Klimak would play the piano and we had a piano at our house and we would sing carols and we would drink and, oh, it was so much fun. My father's family would come, my mother's family would come, and it would be just a huge open house. Those nights were a blast.
Are you prepared to get in the holiday spirit like every year from here on out? Are we going to have an Amy Mann, Brian Setzer style touring holiday show?
Yes, we are. We actually are. We have some shows booked for next year. We did three nights at the Nico where we performed the album, and just this past weekend in San Francisco, and it was so fun. And now we're booked for Portland and Seattle for next Christmas.
Are you going to wear Christmas outfits?
We kind of do. We kind of wear red and black. Yeah, we kind of do it up. You can imagine Kate, you know, she's got this like taffeta, bright red taffeta dress from, you know, like the 1950s, late 50s. And she looks great. And Tim wears his black tuxedo with bright red tie. And I just look like a lesbian in red. I haven't found my style yet. They're so great with their style. I try. It's like, how do I wear a suit and look retro? I guess I could look retro like a guy. So maybe I wear a skinny little tie.
Well, there is one thing about the aesthetics of Christmas
mm-hmm.
that always makes me uncomfortable, which is that if you are living in this elegiac, reverent of the past world,
mm-hmm.
whether it's about 1955 or about Victorian times.
Right.
I'd say those are probably the top two categories of...
Yeah, I would say so too.
Invented Christmas memories.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, is that right? Oh, the Victorian... Oh, I
right.
thought
you know, like Victorian
yeah,
Christmas or like
Ozzie
and Harriet
stuff.
Christmas.
Okay,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are things where you are imagining them as a simpler and purer time.
Right.
But they're also... darker and more hateful time. I mean, there wasn't a lot of...
But black and white was simpler back then.
Too. Lesbian...
Oh, yeah, right.
Lesbian fashion considerations in 1954.
There's no place for me to go back to derive. Now, I don't always dress like a lesbian, but I won't wear a dress. So that, if I'm going to do the whole retro thing, I have to wear a dress, but I'm not going to. So do I want to do it like a drag, like look like... Tim.
I think you would look great in a tailored tuxedo, not a men's tuxedo,
yeah.
But you know, you can alter a tuxedo for a woman's
body.
Oh
yeah, oh they make them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. Yeah, I'll go that route next
time. I think you look fantastic.
Well, thank you.
I mean, the other option, I'm just going to throw it out there.
Yeah?
Santa suit.
I knew you were going there. As long as it's not in the primary red. I don't like that color. I like it to have a little Cabernet in it or a little mm-hmm. Merlot.
Or just whatever plus reindeer horns.
Exactly. That light, please. Kind of go on and off with the lights. That'd be nice.
Well, Jane Lynch, thank you so much for taking the time and coming in on the show. I just so love your work, and it's such a lovely album.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's go out on some more music from Jane Lynch's new Christmas album. Let's hear Winter's Never Cold When You're Around.
You go. There you go.
The air is cold. It's 10 below. The driveway's buried under snow, but winter's never cold when you're around.
Jane Lynch. Give her Christmas album a listen if you haven't. It's a lot of fun. It's called A Swingin' Little Christmas. You can find it pretty much anywhere you buy music.
But winter's never cold when you're around.
That's all for this week's Bullseye. Our show is recorded at MaximumFun.org headquarters, overlooking MacArthur Park in beautiful Los Angeles, California. MacArthur Park is an epicenter of care for people who are less fortunate here in Los Angeles. So we just want to give a holiday shout out to the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank, our pals, the folks from the Dream Center, the folks from LAMP, everybody who is helping people who need a hand this holiday season and all year round in our neighborhood. Our show, produced by Speaking Into Microphones, our producer is Kevin Ferguson. He had help from Christian Duenas and Casey O'Brien this week. Production fellow for MaximumFun.org is Jesus Ambrosio. Our senior producer at MaxFun is Laura Swisher. All our interstitial music is provided by Dan Wally. Our theme was recorded by the Go Team and provided to us by Memphis Industries. If you'd like to hear any of our past shows, all of them are free. Just go to MaximumFun.org. And while you're at it, check out the Bullseye page on Facebook. We'll share all of our interviews with you there, some cool stuff we found on the internet. I just posted this blazing
10-minute-long freestyle that Black Thought did on Hot 97 in New York with Funkmaster Flex. It is just outrageous how good that dude is at rapping. That dude has bars on bars on bars on bars. And you know what? While we're at it, I'll probably, for the holiday season, post my favorite Christmas song. It's from Santa Claus versus the Martians. And it goes, S-A-N-T-A-C-L-A-U-S, hooray for Santa Claus. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's a great song. Okay, I guess that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.